Christina Bernardo Kohlberg is the co-founder and president of Open Dreams, a nonprofit organization which builds communities and future leaders in Cameroon through transformational education support. Christina is undoubtedly one of the most optimistic and energetic nonprofit leaders I've interviewed, having cleared some daunting personal and professional challenges during her career. Her work ethic, her approach, and her results are all awe-inspiring. And now I give you Christina Bernardo Kohlberg. Christina, welcome to the Nonprofiteers Podcast.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And you guys have your own podcast.
We do. It's really exciting. Yes, one of our scholars, Titus, helped us start our first podcast for Open Dreams to kind of interview some of our scholars all over the world and talk about the great work they're doing.
Yeah. When I started the podcast a little while ago, my podcast, I made a joke to my son that, you know, I thought it might be good to do a podcast. There are only like four or five that I've seen. There aren't many, you know, so why not be a groundbreaker?
I know. There's so many. Yeah, it's very hard, but there's some great
it's
ones.
Okay. It's okay, though. It's a great medium. So you're in San Diego. What's the weather like there today?
We've had sunny San Diego for a long time. Yeah. So it's like in the 70s and sunny, and I feel very lucky. My family is originally from Cuba, so I love the sunshine and the beach. So I was California dreaming for many years, and we finally made it over about 4 years ago
and have been quite happy. And you did it. Congratulations. Mm. I love those things too. So it's a mystery why I've stayed in Boston, but I actually like the Boston area. Yeah. So let's start by talking a little bit about Open Dreams and the history. You know, I was all in from the beginning to, boy, I wasn't really sure whether this would work or not, or I was hesitant at some points and was thinking maybe I should do something else. Where were you?
I think we were just really excited. I went to graduate school out in London at the London School of Economics. I was studying international development. And I was very fascinated. One thing I loved at LSE was that we had students literally from all over the world. So any country you were learning about, if you were learning about India, there were like three students in your class who were from India. Or if you were learning about Sudan, there was someone from Sudan in your class. And I always thought it was incredible to actually learn more from the students who are from those countries than necessarily like the professors who've gone to those countries for 3 months and are experts. A good friend of mine, Weiss, was from Uganda. And we said, well, let's bring together students who are studying African development and who are from different African countries, and let's start to talk about these issues. So we formed a club at LSE called the African Presence at LSE. And one of the club members was my now co-founder, Blaise Bouma, who's from Cameroon. And Blaise told me his story about how he was very passionate about education and really wanted to get a scholarship abroad. And he stumbled across an American volunteering in Cameroon for the Peace Corps, actually, who just happened to be from our alma mater, UNC, as the universe would have it. And he said, will you help me get a scholarship to the USA? And she said, sure. Yeah, okay. So she helped pay for his SAT and his TOEFL. She reviewed his essays. And the first year he got into a bunch of universities, but he didn't get a full scholarship. And then the second year, he got three full scholarships and ended up going to Washington and Lee in Virginia, and then to LSE, where we met. And now he has since gone on to Harvard Business School. He was a Schwarzman Scholar. He's worked for Goldman Sachs, and he's starting his own financial startup to ease financial payments in Africa from Cameroon. So he's back in Douala in Cameroon. And then he helped his sister, and she got a full scholarship to McGill in Canada. And then everybody from my hometown is asking me, like, can you help me get a scholarship? Can you help me? And he said, you know, I don't have the time or the money or the resources to help all these students. You know, and I said, well, I do. I have time. And my boyfriend at the time, now husband, Hans, said, well, I have time. I would love to help. And he's like, really? Okay, well, I have this amazing guy on the ground, my high school physics professor, and he would be amazing to run this whole initiative.
You were all in from the right?
We were all in. My husband and I were all in. And like, I think I was always looking, I had always envisioned starting a nonprofit. My family's from Cuba. I'm not sure if I mentioned that. And so it's a little bit difficult, right? We're not really allowed to start anything in Cuba. Some people are doing stuff like here and there to try to help the Cuban population, but I it's not as easy for me to just like, oh, I'm going to start a nonprofit in Cuba and help, right? Because of the, so I was always in my mind, like I wanted to start something, I wanted to help, and I just needed to find the right avenue. And so when this presented itself, it was just like, yeah, absolutely. I'd love to help students try to get scholarships and to support their education. My parents, my dad came to the U.S. on a scholarship from Cuba to study architecture. My husband's parents both came to the U.S. on scholarships to study from Sweden to study chemistry and from the Philippines to study chemistry. So we had a strong tie to education and education as a means to build a bigger life that can support and help others.
It's one of those foundational events that can really change the arc of someone's life completely.
Absolutely. And everyone around them, right? Yeah. It's just incredible how it can impact the whole family and then the whole community.
Yeah. Often there are nonprofit leaders I talk to, and like you, they were all in from the very beginning. You know, they never thought, oh, maybe I should do something else. Or, you know, they were just 100% focused on it right from the get-go. And I think that's really helpful because it's not easy, right?
Oh, it's not easy. It's not easy. We were 100% all in, but we also had to have like full-time side jobs that paid the bills often.
Oh, sure.
As we were getting. Yeah, but we were completely committed. We have all still been, I mean, are consistently communicating, all of us, the founders. So it's been a great, an incredible journey. 10 years later.
10 years later. So it's been implicit a little bit, but talk a little bit about the vision and mission of Open Dreams.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think one thing we all agree on is that talent and skill is everywhere, but opportunity is sometimes not provided in different communities. And that's what we felt really passionate about, is how do we give these students who are incredibly smart an opportunity that doesn't often exist in their community? And that was really, for us, it was like, how do we kind of build this next generation of leaders in Cameroon, but also other countries? We do work in other countries, and we've always hoped to grow, kind of take this model and take it to other countries and other communities. The big part for us was, how do we make sure it has that ripple effect, that it's not just, okay, we're helping these 3-5 students get to college, but that they're starting initiatives, they're volunteering, they're giving back, and they're creating kind of a movement. Yes, so many of our scholars are starting their own nonprofits, starting their own businesses. They're doing so much to help their community, whether they're abroad or they're back home. And yeah, that's just been incredible to see.
What's the arc of the program been like? So say from when you started and until now, what are the major milestones that you've hit? And here's where you get a chance to brag about the work you've done and the impact you've made.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we started so small, and we started with those 5 students, but as we grew, it's like people began to know our name. We joined the HALI network, the High Achieving Low Income Student Network in Africa. And it's been very exciting to see the program expand and kind of take on its own wings. And now we've helped over 200 scholars get full scholarships to universities all over the world, and summer programs around leadership and training and entrepreneurship. It's just, it's been incredible. And I think it took us a long time to figure out how to get into the US market. So getting the scholarships into the first ones in the US were really exciting, obviously me being from the US. And then when we started to hit the Ivy Leagues, that was like very exciting. That was a few years ago. We had our first scholar get into Harvard, which was incredible. And that in it of itself is its crazy story, because he applied to 50 universities.
Wow.
50. And he only got into one.
Harvard?
Yes.
That he got into Harvard.
Isn't that crazy?
That's a tribute to Harvard's admissions process.
Right. Know? Yes, they figured it out. They believe me, they are so happy that they've accepted Muhammad because he's been incredible. And he was one of the first and only freshmen to be a teacher's assistant for that. And one of the first and only African students to be a teacher's assistant for CS50. It's been incredible. Muhammad's wonderful. And in true Open Dreams fashion, like his first summer, he probably could have gotten an internship anywhere in the entire world. But instead, he applied for a grant to run the summer academy in Cameroon for Open Dreams. And he took the grant money and ran an incredible summer program back home in Cameroon. So that's the kind of thing we just see over and over again that just makes us so proud of our scholars. One thing that people do criticize us for is a brain drain, which is a valid concern. But what we always talk about is that almost all of our scholars, if they have not physically gone back to Cameroon, which many of them have, they are starting initiatives, supporting families, running the summer academy, coming back every summer they can to improve the life and the communities of those they love. So that's been a beautiful thing to see.
Yeah, and that's a strange critique, because if you think about the baseline of no one getting scholarships, no one getting advanced educational opportunities, right? That to, you know, all these students, 200 plus students that have had this opportunity, some of which are going back, some of which may not, but still they're, so if you compare to the baseline, it's not a brain drain.
Yes, exactly.
It's a brain gain.
Yeah, brain gain. Yes. And if you look at our founder, Blaise, he did go back. Like, he's gone back to Cameroon. Yeah. He's living there. His sister, who went to McGill, has her organization, Hope for Cameroon, to help internally displaced students. So they're both doing tons of work in Cameroon. There are very good higher education institutions in Cameroon. It's just hard to get in them sometimes, especially for medical school. So if you're not the lucky one who gets into medical school, the opportunities just feel very limited. Having this opportunity to go abroad, to study abroad, is very life-changing for our scholars. And then I would say the other exciting part in terms of the ARC is just the new programming we've added along the years. And
the women's
programming. Yeah. We kind of started in education and college access is what they call us, access to scholarships. And then a few years ago, we expanded into the Aviva Women in Science programs, and that was to support women and child health and public health in Cameroon, and specifically to support women studying the health and sciences in Cameroon. So that was really exciting for us. We have now one Aviva scholar who is finishing her medical degree in neonatology in Bamenda, University of Bamenda, and hopes to be a neonatologist, which we're very excited about. And we've given away two grants, one to help with prenatal screening for 100 pregnant women in the rural region of Northwest Cameroon that's been highly affected by the conflict. So a lot of these women were not getting any medical treatment. Second one we're launching this year around actually epilepsy and how to screen for epilepsy and create awareness about epilepsy in children with a fantastic doctor from Cameroon as well, female doctor from Cameroon as well. So that's been very exciting for us as well.
Could you talk a little bit about the genesis of the Aviva's Women in Science program? I know that's somewhat of a sensitive subject, but it's also incredibly inspiring.
Of course. So Aviva is actually the name of our daughter, our third daughter, Aviva Lilia, who actually left this earth at 10 and a half months. She had still to this day an undiagnosed illness that was, she had been hospitalized six times when she passed away and kept showing up with lethargy and bradycardia. So a very slow heart rate until the last time when her heart rate actually did go out. So extremely tragic, really, of course, understandably shook our entire worlds. What was so beautiful about the response to losing Aviva was really how the Open Dreams community stepped in right away. Aviva left this world in November 2020, November 17th. Literally the next month, December 15th, they launched the Aviva Day in Cameroon, where a lot of our scholars raised money locally And internationally, they visited 3 hospitals in Cameroon and the NICUs of those hospitals. And they gave money to the families who were struggling to pay bills for oxygen and other hospital bills. They brought Christmas presents and other presents for the holidays for these families. And yeah, it was just so beautiful. I mean, as you can probably imagine, Hans and I were just like in the throes of grief and like couldn't do very much, kind of paralyzed. But just to see this response from our community and just how they came together. And now Aviva Day has become this huge day that everyone, like everyone at Open Dreams, says it's like their favorite day of the year. Everybody gets so excited. They spend months fundraising, preparing. This year they visited 5 hospitals and gave away $5,000 to help families in need. We had over 100 volunteers in 5 different cities. So it was just incredible just to see the impact that's having and to see her name on every picture and every flyer. And the people were painting. We have an Aviva symbol that's like a butterfly. I can actually show it here. So it spells A-V-I.
Oh, look at that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. A-V-I-V-A. Which has become part of the Open Dreams logo. And everyone has that on their shirts, but people were painting their faces. They were painting it on their arms. It was just really beautiful. Yeah. So to see her live on through that and through the Aviva Women in Science program, the pain never goes away. But it just gives me so much joy to see her name live on through this, her legacy, and that everyone's always remembering her through this work. Yeah.
It's hard to imagine anything after what's kind of an unthinkable scenario for a lot of parents. Hard to imagine anything endearing you more to your colleagues and your work than that, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, absolutely. No, I mean, like I said, we had no hand in it in the first day. Like we didn't know it was even getting prepared. It's heartbreaking, but in a good way.
And what a beautiful way to remember your daughter. So
it brings me a lot of joy that when I get to work on the Aviva programs and our Aviva scholar in Buame, who's amazing. It's just, you know, for us, it was like, well, we don't know what Aviva may have studied. We don't know what profession she may have pursued. But, you know, I assume from her lovely, joyful character that she would have been helping people in some form or fashion. And so for us, it was like, okay, let's try to, you know, take the money, the time, the effort that we would have put into her education, her career, and let's invest that in other women, young women who are passionate about giving back science, medicine, health, making the world a better place. So it's just really beautiful to see Mbwame grow and our other grant recipients doing this incredible work in her name. It's very life-affirming.
Yeah, and clearly you're having a big impact with these programs. What are some of the challenges that you've faced? Well, if you had to highlight 3 of the biggest challenges over the 10 years, what would they be?
Well, I'll do the most obvious one last because I think every nonprofit has the financial challenge. I mean, I think for us personally, the crisis in Cameroon has been a huge challenge. The Anglophone crisis, as it's called there, between the English-speaking part and the French-speaking part of Cameroon, has made it very dangerous. And we had to close down our center in Bamenda for over a year. And we had to very quickly move our staff and their families to Yaoundé, the French-speaking part, just because of all of the fighting and fear for everyone, for our staff, for our students, the constant fear. Yeah. And, you know, almost every day you hear of somebody who's lost somebody, been injured. But it's a pretty terrifying place to be in. So the crisis has been tremendously hard for us. One thing we want to continue to focus on and build is to be able to offer housing to students when they've been displaced. We have a lot of internally displaced students who will leave the English-speaking part of Cameroon and come to Yaoundé and literally sleep at our center. And we're just like buying rollout mats and trying to make people comfortable and giving some money for food and basic lodging. So that's like a dream for us, is to be able to have more stable housing. So often for our programs, we'll rent 1 or 2 apartments to be able to house like 6, 9, 10 students. We would love to offer housing for pretty much anyone who needed it and for as long as they need it. So that's been like a big push for us, is to figure out how we can offer more housing and support for internally displaced students. I have to talk about it, the financial one, but just, you know, the financial, like that's the one, the big challenge of being in charge of a nonprofit that I never looked forward to and was always kind of frustrated by. You want to just focus on the issues and you want to just focus on your programming and things like that, but you have to also worry about fundraising and grant writing, you know, getting people to believe in your mission. So that's been like a consistent challenge. But
if you love program work and like you do, it's kind of the polar opposite to go to fundraising, right? I know nonprofit people actually got started in marketing and they're just as passionate, dedicated as anyone else. But for a lot of us, it's just not fun.
I've never liked asking people for money anyways. So having to feel like you're constantly asking or like, you know, you're, so that, you know, that part of it is not very fun for me. But on the good side of that, you know, we formed like a fundraising group within Open Dreams and we have like a grant writing team. So, you know, it's been lovely to connect with, you know, scholars on the ground and who are abroad who are passionate about like supporting the Open Dreams mission and growing it. So that's been fun. And
yeah. That's a perpetual challenge. You are the only consolation is you're absolutely not alone. You're in very good company. It's the hardest, particularly if you love the work you're doing, you feel like it ought to speak for itself and people should just want to invest, but it's not, it's never that simple, unfortunately.
You know, I worked on business development in the for-profit side too, in the social enterprise. And it's like, you're also, you know, you're trying to convince people to buy something. So it's every industry, you know, you have, you're trying to convince people of doing something with their money, I suppose. Every industry has their like ups and downs, but that's, oh, if we could get to a world where I could just hire a grant writer fundraiser and I never had to think about it again, that would be great.
So you do most of it yourself at this point, or do you have people on the team that help?
We do with our team, though. I mean, we have like a kind of a volunteer-based team that supports. Mm-hmm. And whenever like a grant comes up, we work together. But I usually still kind of spearhead and oversee and kind of review all of the writing and things like that. And we do have one staff member who's partially focused on it, but it's not been like a full-time position. Probably should be.
But
our priorities have always gone in other ways.
So do you focus on individual donors or big donors or grants or all three?
It's kind of all three. Mm-hmm. I will say that we've kind of sustained where we are for 10 years because of more like individual big donors who are in our networks, which has been a great privilege. And then, you know, these last few years, it takes some time to show the impact so that grant making organizations will, you know, like what you're doing and want to give you grants. So we have been focusing more on grants in the last 5 years and had some success with smaller grants. We still haven't hit it out of the park with one of the big ones yet, but I'm hopeful that maybe we will one day soon. We have so much great impact to show. Yeah, we do a lot of, you know, we'll do one or two crowdfunding campaigns a year from individuals. And that's kind of knocked us into a little bit the donor advice funds. We've had a few big checks from anonymous folks be delivered, which was pretty exciting. So we're trying to tap more into that market, the DAF market, and, you know, see what we can find there. But we also just like run a tight ship and we're very, you know, good, like the, you know, managing the finances so that it goes as far as possible. That is a goal. More than anything, I'd love to be able to hire more people in Cameroon at a good salary because jobs are hard to come by so that they can provide for their families. So,
yeah, well, like we said, fundraising is hard. Is it mostly word of mouth or do you have email campaigns or what do you do that way?
Yeah, I mean, we have a pretty active social media that a lot of our scholars run. So we're almost constantly several posts a day on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. Then we have email campaigns and at least 1 to 2 updates a month on what's going on. We have a pretty active blog post that all of our scholars collectively write about what they're doing and where they're doing it. And then the podcast as well that we're constantly updating. But we get our word out. We have quite a few followers on Instagram and Facebook, and we stay present with those who are interested in our mission for sure.
I think it's enormously helpful to get beneficiaries involved in fundraising because they can communicate things that the program staff or the leadership can't communicate as effectively.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's wonderful. It's so great that they're generating most of the content. And it's really beautiful to see that. And I think highlighting more of their stories is something I want to do. One of our scholars is really interested in like videos and video clips. So he's been creating a lot of wonderful videos spotlighting our scholars. That's been a fun mission. But we're kind of like holding out. We're like, what, these days we're going to get one of these big grants that we always apply for. Holding out hopes for them.
It'll happen.
Hopefully.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a, sometimes I'm torn between the numbers game, the data aspect of it, which argues for expanding the network of people that you reach out to and just getting to as many of those people as you can. And on the other hand, going after the big donors and trying to get the home run, right?
Yeah, definitely. You have to kind of split your time between both. And our challenge is, the challenge we keep running into is like, we just don't qualify for many grants. Like, I'll get all excited. This new grant came out for education in Africa. And then they're like, but from only these three countries. And if you're not in these three countries, don't apply. And it's never Cameroon. Or it gets very specific about what it is. And oh, it has to be civil rights, or it has to be peace building. So it feels very difficult to find a grant that you actually qualify for. I'm sure a lot of other nonprofits feel as well.
Oh yeah. When I was at Mercy Corps, you know, we had a staff of folks who pretty much that's what they did. They wrote grants.
Yeah.
And it's shocking and exciting when you win a huge grant, but I'm not sure it's income you can count on. You know, it's you have to do it and you want to do it, but it's dicey if you put all your eggs in that basket.
I believe it. We have never secured that basket, so we don't know too much yet, but if it ever happened.
Well, the time will come. And then when it happens, you can ask all the questions about, is this repeatable? How do I hit another home run? You know?
Absolutely. And a big thing for us too, and one of our brother sister organizations in Africa that does similar work to us in a different country is, you know, as our alumni network becomes bigger, like how do they contribute to the financial mission of Open Dreams? And we are seeing that as scholars start to get jobs and go on for their masters and PhDs, they want to give back financially. So I think hopefully that will be a big line item for us one day where our alumni are actually donating back to the organization. So we're hopeful of that for sure.
Yeah, great. Okay, I won't pick on you anymore about fundraising. I only did it because it's just a ubiquitous problem. And also you said it's not your favorite thing to do, which is also very common. So it's a big challenge. Yeah,
it is.
So what are the principles of leadership that you've brought to bear? You know, your philosophy about moving the needle, getting good collaboration, making things happen. Yeah. What are some of the principles that you've learned over time and you bring to bear on your day-to-day work?
It's a great question. I think a big one for me is like everyone's voice matters and everybody's voice counts. And we've been big on that from the start of like, we are very interested to hear what our 16, 17, 18, 19, 21 year old scholars want, right? What do they want? What do they need? How can we best support them? And trying to build a program like by them, for them, essentially. And that's been very gratifying for us to see that a lot of our scholars, they'll go on. Several went to University of Edinburgh in Scotland, and they applied for a grant to come back to Yaoundé and run a summer program altogether. So they actually launched our first Yaoundé Summer Academy from grant money that they got from the MasterCard Foundation through University of Edinburgh. And then we continued running it. So it's been about, I think, giving power and empowering everybody in the organization to give back in whatever manner that looks like. And, you know, something we're very proud of is that like at over 90% of our scholars who go through our program, who go through the summer academy, who end up getting a scholarship, they are all giving back. They are all mentoring other scholars. They are all supporting them in their dreams. They're all starting organizations. So I think that's a big one for me, is that everybody's voice counts. Like, I believe in this idea of a kind of horizontal leadership, but how do we give everyone a voice? How do we empower everybody? So, you know, we have teams within Open Dreams. We have a lot of volunteers, and we have this kind of unique world where a lot of our, you know, just the way the education system works, scholars apply, you know, junior or senior year, and then it's a whole nother year, if not 2 years, before their scholarship starts. Yeah. So we have this whole group of scholars who have a year to do something with. And so they're helping Open Dreams and they're supporting us. So we have different groups, communication, grant writing, new programs. So it's really exciting to see all of the scholars like having their own hand in growing the organization. So that's really important to us. And I think it's just like starting with the need. You know, sometimes we'll be like, let's do an entrepreneurship program. Let's have them like start a business, da 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 da. And then, you know, our country manager will be like, yeah, sure, good idea. You know, but it's like, it's not relevant or it doesn't work or, you know. So yeah. We really try to, you know, listen to the voices on the ground and hear what they need and what they're pushing for. And then, you know, design programming that really speaks to their needs. And yeah,
that's been exciting. Well, that's a common situation too. And, you know, the lesson you cited, which is empowerment, democracy, good listening. If you're not from Cameroon and you're working in Cameroon, that's like your first priority, right? You have to do that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And there are so many great ideas everywhere you go. I mean, I've learned that working in international development. Everywhere you go, it's like people already know the solutions to the problems that they're facing. It's just they don't necessarily have the resources or the money to make them happen or like the networks or the partnerships. But most people know within their own communities what they want, the change they want to happen and how they could see it happening. So it's just about finding the people with the great ideas and the mission and supporting them and making it happen.
Right. Yeah, you know, you're describing a little bit servant leadership, which is all about empowering your people, running in interference, recognizing that not at the center of the action, you're not at the, or you shouldn't be seen as the center of the action. You know, that's so much more powerful to do things that way, I think.
Oh, yeah. It's much more exciting to see other people kind of blossom into their true selves. And that's the other big program. What we're really excited about right now is our women's leadership program that we're mid program. So that's why I've been so busy and hard to track, but we have a women's leadership program. We're doing it virtually for 3 months and working with 20 women from Cameroon, South Africa, and the US. And really it's about that. A lot of them are staff or scholars, volunteers at Open Dreams, and just kind of, it's a confidence building program. So giving them, helping them find the confidence within themselves and their own kind of true light to let it shine. And yeah, it's been really exciting to just see the growth already that these incredible women are having. The power of believing in yourself to make change it's exciting.
It's huge. Efficacy. Social cognitive theory. Yes. We've known that for a long time, but we don't bring it to bear, you know?
Yes.
So are you a naturally motivated person, or are there times when you have to gin yourself up, or you seem like you're naturally motivated, like it's kind of organic with you?
Yeah, I would say like I've always kind of been, my husband too, like pretty naturally positive person in spite of a lot of the tough things that have happened to us. I think we've gone through one of the worst losses in the world, but we're both kind of just positive, hardworking, very purpose-driven people. I've always felt, I had a wonderful professor in college who was from the Caribbean islands, and he said, you know, knowledge is not only power, knowledge is responsibility. And that just like always stuck with me. It was like, oh, this, like, I have a responsibility to like use this wonderful education I've received in undergrad and grad school and like give back and help others. And so I think it's been like a driving passion from a very young age of like, how can I help others? How can I give back? How could I best support others' dreams? I have privilege and opportunity, and especially educational privilege. And like, how do I give that back? It's been a big thing for me. So that motivates me. But of course, I'm like everybody. I have days where I'm like, I can't, you know, I'm so overworked. I'm so overwhelmed. I can't do this anymore. Or, you know, but mostly it's like an intrinsic motivation.
Good. That power and responsibility thing, oddly enough, reminded me of Spider-Man, Peter Parker. That's one of the insights he comes to, you know, with great power comes great responsibility.
Responsibility. Right? Yeah, exactly. And he was like, it was very powerful. He was like, blame somebody who's working at the gas station for not solving environmental sustainability issues. No. But someone who's going to grad school to study it, you got to do something about it. If you're getting that education, you got to do something with it. So that's just how I felt.
But it's also, I think, you know, you said purpose driven, and I think it's meaningful and life-giving to embrace that, to embrace service to other people. It's not just, it's not pure altruism. Mm-mm. It's good for the giver, you know? So that's a false dualism that I can be for myself or I can be for other people, I think.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I definitely get the most satisfaction when I'm able to help somebody achieve their dreams, far more than if I achieve my own dream, you know? There's nothing like hearing the news that somebody else got a scholarship or someone's going to Yale for residency for their medical degree or getting their PhD at University of Toronto on the scholarship.
What are three things that you love to do in your day-to-day work? You just mentioned one of them. Yeah. What are some other activities that bring you joy?
Yeah. Well, I definitely love to talk to our scholars and to hear like what their dreams and aspirations are. And figure out ways to support them. I love reading their essays and hearing about the work that they're doing on the ground. And then I think my biggest purpose, excitement, is helping women believe in themselves and believe in their ability to accomplish anything. And I think when a lot of forces have been against us, especially with our scholars, a lot of sexism, racism, a lot of isms, they're fighting. So helping them to kind of see their own light and let it shine is probably what I feel is kind of my life purpose, working with women.
What are, if you had to give three pieces of advice to someone who's starting a nonprofit or someone is in the early stages, what would you say to that person?
I would say first, make sure it's your real life passion. If you're not really passionate about it, sometimes people come to you with this potential opportunity to start something. And if it's not the problem that keeps you up at night, it might not be the right opportunity. If it is, go for it, because you'll find ways to make it work. Even when money is super tight, you will find people support you. If it's your passion, go for it. I would say surround yourself with the right people, like finding the right team, finding the right board of directors who really believe in your mission, who are going to push it, who are going to highlight it on their pages, finding the advisors who are going to keep pushing you even when times are tough is important. And then just like you want to love who you work with, right? Like you want to love and respect the people you work with day in, day out. Like that's what makes life livable when work is, you know, 40 or more hours of your week. I would just say, you know, just keep pushing. It's not always going to be easy. There'll be hard days, there'll be good days, there'll be bad days, there'll be terrible things that happen, there'll be exciting things that happen, and just remembering that it's all part of the journey, the ups and downs, and as long as your true north is there and your passion is there, things will work, things will eventually continue to grow.
Yeah.
That's what I'd say.
So I asked that question to all nonprofit leaders, and it's becoming shocking how much convergence there is on exactly the three things you said.
Oh, wow.
People first. Yeah. Be passionate and be clear about what your passion is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then persistence. Don't quit.
Yeah. 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 So true.
Pretty powerful. So true.
Yeah. That's funny. I guess we've all had to learn those same lessons ourselves.
Yeah, well, I think it's not statistically valid at this point, but there is quite a bit of convergence around those three themes. Yeah. There was a quick story I was going to tell you about, you know, one of my favorite guitar players, George Benson, right? With him when I was just out of college and I was thinking about a career in music. And I read this interview, I think it was in Guitar Player magazine. And basically he was asked, you know, when did you decide to do music? And he said, oh, I never decided. That's all I did. It's all I ever wanted to do. I'd get up in the morning, I'd play my guitar, maybe eat a little breakfast, then I play my guitar, then I, you know, eat lunch, then I play my guitar, then I go jam with some people, you know. So he never made the decision. And at that point, I kind of knew I probably wasn't going to be a full-time professional guitar player, right? Right.
Yeah.
But it's so refreshing and energizing to hear someone who has found their passion and is living it. So it's like, you know, that's your open realized dream, right?
Yeah. Yes. I always say like, yep, the foundation, this is my dream come true too, you know? And so it's so wonderful to see others' dreams continue to flourish. Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
So to close out, is there anything special people should do to get in contact with you or to, you know, to plug in somehow? The website's there, and I'll advertise the website as part of the podcast and part of the article.
Yeah. I mean, I think definitely, you know, checking out the podcast, especially episode with our founder, Blaise Bouma, is really powerful. If you want to learn more about us, following us on Instagram, LinkedIn, we're super active, Open Dreams, at Open Dreams. And yeah, we're really excited about our women's leadership program, and we're hoping to continue that with other groups. So if there's a group of women that you really want to support with confidence building, you know, we're here, we're excited. I worked in leadership development for 10 plus years. You know, peripherally, and it's a big passion of mine.
Thank you so much for your time and all your words of wisdom and your openness. It was just great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It was such a pleasure. And it's been great to learn from you as well.
Yeah, well, we'll stay in touch, and I want to understand, you know, I want to offer my own help and service.
Please let me know. Thank you so much.
Okay, Christina.
Great to see you too.
Take care.